Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Runner's World podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Ben Hobson, the deputy digital editor. Ben, tell us what we got coming up this week.
This week we are talking to the man behind power, speed and endurance, Brian McKenzie, who is a champion of an endurance training method based very much in the world of strength over miles.
Ooh. Sounds interesting,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was at the night of the 10,000 metre PBs on the weekend.
The big one.
The big one. It's fantastic. I also managed to skive off the Strava Media Mile.
Yeah.
They're encouraging.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I cited Yeah, I cited a tight hamstring, which is true. But some of our colleagues took part. And I mean, that was just a kind of footnote in what was an amazing night of track and field. And yeah, it's really great to go down there and see, like, the buzz around track racing.
Yeah, because there is such a legitimate buzz as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, we can touch upon the IAAF's decision. If you really wanted a benchmark event that highlighted how engaged runners are with 10,000 metres, but that distance of running, that is the night.
100%, yeah. It really flies in the face of the decision to ban 5,000 metres, 10,000 metres from the Diamond League.
Mm.
And I guess, you know, the message that puts out is that, you know, people just aren't interested in engaging in these longer distance events. But the crowds there were, you know, five or six deep. There was beer. And that's it. It's all about the format. Like, you put beer there, you get the you know, spectators actually on the track.
The tunnel.
It's been called the Glastonbury of track and field.
Wow.
Yeah.
God.
Wow. It's a little bit of a stretch, but it was a great night nonetheless. Yeah, some good British performances, particularly in the female race. Scotland's Steph Twell won the women's event in 31 minutes, 8 seconds.
Phew, flying.
Yeah, Ailish McCaughan just a little bit behind that as well, but another great run. And in the men's race, Italy's, and I'm going to pronounce his first name wrong, undoubtedly, Yemene Berem Kripa, triumphed in the men's race, running in 27 minutes, 49 seconds. So, I mean, just staggering times. And I think all the men in that final elite race went under 30 minutes. So that's the kind of like standard you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. And then the atmosphere and the crowd and everyone else getting into it. A 27-minute crescendo.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, really dramatic. And great to see track and field being given that kind of platform.
Yeah, excellent.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ben, after the fevered response to Kerry's jingle, I've done the only logical thing.
Stopped.
I've written another jingle.
Okay.
I'd like to play it to you now.
Please.
So this is a tribute, a collaboration with The Who, and it's called Guest of the Week, and it's a tribute to the part of the podcast in which we invite an interesting person from the world of running.
Great.
So here it goes.
Great.
Guest of the Week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
There you go, there's a Who there with Guest of the Week.
I think each time you do this, I become more and more surprised about the amount of spare time you have. That's a good one. I really like that one.
Good.
That was good.
I'm glad. Well, look, let's not waste any more time, Ben. You can tell us who we've got coming up as our guest of the week.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
When approaching any feat of endurance, time spent racking up the miles has always been the method most used to reach race day feeling prepared. Yet Brian McKenzie prescribes a very different approach. The founder of CrossFit Endurance believes it is strength and not mileage that most runners are lacking. It is a pleasure to have him join us on today to explain more. Brian, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
I think to just go straight in with the big question, in your opinion, what is wrong, if we use the word wrong, in a high mileage approach to training?
I don't know that wrong is, like, as you alluded to, is the right word. The problems that we will see with high mileage, and whether you're talking about the general population or elite athletes, is when someone runs into trouble from, let's say, a mechanical injury, which is predominantly what we see, right, versus impact injury. The patterns that are set in from a neurological standpoint are really well developed at that point, meaning we've set up in a compensatory pattern more than likely. That's what we all are. We're compensators. Now, if we're talking about professional athletes, we're talking about professional compensators. They just have done it better. They've learned to do it better, and they've learned to be able to handle things and recover from things faster. But once we, the issue that can set in is the patterns. And we forget that patterns are a problem. And so this is the, in essence, why we've developed the programs that we have, was because we wanted to expose all said kind of different patterns so that we're actually getting the body to move more fluidly and more dynamically in a better mechanical position, right? Now, that doesn't mean that a lot of these elite runners aren't doing that. You know, like, they are. It's a fact. It's just they can get away with it for so much. And, you know, my good friend Dan Pfaff, who's, I mean, one of the greatest coaches in the world, you know, he works with a lot of elite runners. He says it's the same thing. You know, these are the same things. And where can we start with these people who get set in these patterns and decide they just want to take time off and go back and repeat said program? You know, it's like, hey, we have to look at this. That we got to change the paradigm a little bit here. You got to start looking at this approach a little differently. And this is, you know, just the big issue that we see with these things. And don't think we don't see these things with high intensity programs either, because we have seen a plenty with, you know, the CrossFit community.
Well, I guess, you know, the kind of 80-20 approach gets talked about, Brian, and this kind of idea that 80% of training should be low intensity and 20% high intensity. And that seems, at least, to be what a lot of these elite runners, people like Mo Farah, Eliud Kipchoge, are following. Why shouldn't everyday runners follow that example? What kind of problems do you think they might sort of run into doing that?
Well, I mean, that's simple. How fast does Eliud run?
Too fast.
In 26.2 miles.
Yeah, like 4 minutes 20.
How do you think he got there?
By running quickly.
Running slow. You know, that's a developmental thing. And he started off with fast, shorter distances. No elite runner in any long distance sport has ever started off that I am aware of as an elite long distance runner. They started off as shorter course, faster runners. Shorter course, faster bicycle riders. Is it odd that BMX racers make insanely good track cyclists, which make insanely good crit riders, which, you know, and 1500 meters runners make incredibly good 5K runners, incredibly good 10K runners, and so on, right?
Yeah.
You know, we saw this with Haile Gebrselassie.
Sure.
You know, he went from, you know, what was it, like 5K, 10K, you know, half marathon, world champion, you know, up to marathon when he became the, you know, fastest guy in the world at that time.
So kind of speed precedes mileage in that sense. I guess you get quick before you go long. That's what you'd say.
Certainly, but now, don't let that mean that I'm just saying we need to go out and run fast. Like, we're using a very different approach right now that slows a lot of people down who aren't metabolically efficient, right? Which is also exposing mechanical problems, where we implement a gearing system through breath control that teaches people how aerobically efficient they actually are. So going out and running a 5K, that should be a predominantly aerobic or slow glycolytic you know, process for 90% of the population. Yet what we're seeing is people go out and run and they're completely carb dependent and anaerobic.
Just to take a quick step back, Brian, just to sort of summarize maybe the key fundamentals of your training in comparison then to the long mileage, just so we can get that sort of like juxtaposition about the two.
Yeah, so I think that if we start people off with more of a skill-based approach that uses intensity blocks based on how well somebody can hold up mechanically,
right,
meaning feeling good, looking good, approaching some intense work, there's nothing wrong with an 80-20% rule, you know, but I don't believe that that is a model that fits everyone. Mm. In fact, I know it doesn't fit everyone. Nonetheless, you know, that's like saying every program works for every person.
Yeah.
That doesn't, that can't work. That's an impossibility. Right. And so you have to be able to look at what actually, what you feel and how it works. And we've just found that a skill based approach with a little more intensity added into it to develop most runners actually has the biggest bang for our buck, because by and large, all these people are working. They don't have, their professional job is not to run and recover.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to go to work. Right. And that requires to be on again. And thus, what's the best approach for that? And what can we get? It's a quality over quantity approach.
Yeah.
And quantity can come as a byproduct of the quality, but we've got to be developed properly so that when we actually start to run into trouble with, you know, we start to feel pain. Oh, hey, why am I doing that? What have I neglected doing? What am I not doing around that? You know, what could I be doing to enhance this? Right.
A lot of runners, Brian, are still worried about lifting heavy weights, and they, you know, they look at maybe, let's say, like a CrossFit, a classic CrossFit build, and say, "Wow, that person looks jacked." Doesn't necessarily look like a classic marathon runner, let's say. I mean, what would you say to people who are worried that, you know, throwing around heavy weights is going to add unwanted bulk?
Well, if 5 or 10 pounds of bulk has you running faster and healthier, is that going to provide you with more of a smile than, you know, a IT band syndrome or something that's showing up
sure.
all the time?
Yeah.
Nonetheless, I don't think everybody should be CrossFitting.
Yeah.
I've managed to adapt my approach or evolve my approach a little bit. There are plenty of body weight exercises, and I have seen in my time at this point, 15 plus years dealing with this, that not everybody responds well to weights. That doesn't mean that bulk, you know, thinking bulk or putting on muscle is a bad thing, is misunderstanding human physiology. That's just a gross misinterpretation of what your understanding of being a runner or anything is. You should be lean. You should be strong. That doesn't mean you need to look like a bodybuilder. But being afraid of putting on muscle is that's more of a mind issue than anything.
Sure.
Do you think that in an event such as a marathon or an ultra marathon, most people are limited by their aerobic fitness or their muscle strength? I mean, because these long endurance events where, you know, your body is essentially breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys approach then the sort of the what would be the classic time on feet kind of training attitude and that sort of thing?
From an individual standpoint, it's understanding where the athlete starts to break down.
Yeah.
Then being able to develop a program around that so that we can maybe increase that time on feet a little bit, but not taking away from the time that we need to develop the individual for their said goal, right? So if they want to hit a specific time or they want to just accomplish something, those are two very different approaches.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, do I need to tear this athlete apart in order to get them to the starting line of of an ultra marathon, let's say, right? The answer to that is unequivocally no. And the problem with suffering type sports, endurance in general, is that we fall into this mind game of I just need to get better at suffering.
Yeah.
And that is not adaptation. That is just getting bad at that's getting, you know, really good at doing something that is a choice to tear oneself down. There's a big difference between the front runners and the, you know, middle of packers and late finishers, right? And I'm not saying there's a problem, you know, like I'm not trying to make fun of anybody here or downgrade anybody. But the fact is if we actually approach things from a standpoint of adaptation, which is all about nature, like, it's, you know, nature is stress and adaptation, plain and simple. And we forget that.
Yeah.
We forget that a lot. And, you know, the adaptation phase doesn't mean I should be running every single day, doing the same thing every single day, or trying to increase mileage every single week on something. I've got to listen to things and understand that, that my body responds in specific ways. And when I hit something and I need to get through that layer of recovery to come back and hit that rebound through super compensation, there are a number of things that we can add in there from a stressor standpoint that are not running based that could inevitably have a huge impact, not only hormonally, but physiologically, that impact the runner in profound ways. And it's just, we get stuck in these one way, one thing fits all, because we're running a race that's going to have us on our feet for, you know, 6, 10, 12, 24, 30 hours, right? And we forget that that's, you know, is exactly the question that you brought up, is this isn't an aerobic conditioning problem. Although there are some things in there that I would now say there are some aerobic conditioning problems in there. You know, but this is more of a strength and conditioning or a tissue problem and developing the tissue. And I think the biggest thing that we've seen, to be totally honest, is the ability for the athletes to recover post race or post event.
I guess some people, Brian, would worry doing a high intensity program that they would be more likely to get injured.
I understand that. Like, I understand fear. You know, I get it, man. I mean, it's the same thing for the person who does, you know, who's an Olympic weightlifter that says, "Are you crazy? You're going to go run a marathon or a hundred or an ultra endurance event?
Yeah.
Why would I ever want to do that? I'd destroy myself." That's fear.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, hey, what do you want to understand about that? Do you want to learn anything, or do you want to just live in that fear? And the fact is I understand that there's not, you know, there's some not so great coaching out there. You know, but this is where we have to take responsibility for ourselves and understanding that we, you know, meet the right people or reach out to the right people and look to the right people for how we can actually apply training methodologies and ideas and the principles behind those things. And there's some great coaches. I know specifically there's great coaches in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked with a bunch of them. Nonetheless, you just have to seek them out, and great coaches aren't going to allow you to move in ways or do things in ways that they know or understand at this point to harm you.
I think that the other side of, or certainly part of your program, that is probably sort of lost in the sort of translation of what strength and conditioning means is actually that your mobility is massively important.
Yeah, I'm talking about, hey, before we have a runner who's never squatted before, squatting.
Yep.
Let me see you lunge with just your body weight.
Yep.
Oh, okay, we can barely do that. Well, that's going to be our squat workout for today. You know, and oh, by the way, when I teach you how to stabilize into getting into that lunge or that runner's lunge, I'm going to have you hold it, and so that we are actually getting some sort of mobility out of this as well, and showing you how limited you are in extension. You know, and we can then explain to people, hey, this thing with extension is so important for you because you're actually attempting to be an extension every footstep you take, and you're missing it. And because you're missing it, you're now taking things like, and I'm just telling a story, right? But it's like now your hip flexors are picking up the slack.
Yeah.
And so your pelvis is out of place. And so now you're setting your knee up for some problems, which inevitably could have, you know, ramifications for your ankles and your feet. You know, and it's a systems problem. And so we need to approach it from that standpoint and show people. And so loading people up and bringing them in, you know, we approach it from, there's mobility in everything we do. There's an understanding of mobility. And that's what, you know, that's the difference between, you know, like a yogi and a gymnast is stability.
Yeah.
You know, they're both doing body weight and moving through high ranges of motion. But the gymnast is, you know, using a lot more stability and dynamic approach to everything, right? And there's nothing wrong with either. But it's, you know, taking those approaches. So you would see a lot of all of those variables with inside the program that we use.
I know that your program is very individualized, Brian, but I wonder if we could make Just a few generalizations. When it comes to strength, when it comes to strength and conditioning, how often should people be doing this stuff? Is once a week enough? Is there a too much approach? Where would you see the sweet spot with this?
Well, I'll tell you what. Look at it from like a running standpoint. Mm. If you wanted to go, you know, run a 5K or beyond, would you just run once a week?
No.
Now, we want to make sure that you're going to accomplish your running goal.
Yeah.
But we also don't want you sore every week and damning what it is you're doing in the, you know, if you're doing some strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So we're talking at least twice, if not three or more times a week sometimes, but those sessions don't always, that's not like high, you know, big approaches, you know, like, I mean, I was just out at Altus, which is one of the track and field leaders in the you know, world. And they deal with a lot of track and field sprinters. And there's a lot of elite level runners, 1500 and 5Kers out there at the time. And they were all in the gym three or four days a week, you know. You know, they're doing things. It's just like, oh, hey, maybe it's not as aggressive as like we've put up on our programs, because they're, you know, the approach is being very individualized and careful with an individual. And that's what should happen, you know. But if you can get yourself up to understanding movement patterns and what you're doing, there's no reason you can't use intensity through your, you know, strength and conditioning work. Then inevitably, metabolic training is metabolic training, guys. And if I can get things enhanced that way, I can actually complement what it is I'm doing with the running, yet not ingraining bad patterns, you know, spending a little too much time on my feet.
Brian, if people want to find out a bit more about power, speed, endurance, where can they go?
PowerSpeedEndurance.com. Everything's there. All of the training ideas, programs, all of it is there to keep the, you know, people a little more well-rounded, you know, just a little bit of a different approach to things and how we kind of see the world.
Brian, thanks so much for being on the Runner's World podcast. It's absolutely great to speak to you about your training method and, a really, really fascinating approach to endurance. Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, appreciate it.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I like any different training approach that just in the mixer, just giving it a little shake.
Yeah,
making you think differently.
Yeah, I think that, Brian, makes loads of sense, particularly if, like the majority of people listening to this, you know, when you're not running, you're sitting down. So things like mobility and strength are really like, can really suffer.
Anyone listening who's probably injured, a lot of it will ring true. Mm. They probably aren't going to the gym as much as they should be. They are sitting down all day.
Yeah.
You probably have got niggles. Like, I mean, it kind of sounds like my story at the moment. Like,
yeah,
I've neglected a lot of stuff that I'm aware of, and I'm now injured, and I kind of understand that, and it kind of gives me a sense of like, right, here's something to knuckle down with. I know I'm not a big mileage runner.
Sure.
When it comes to like training, I just physically don't. It doesn't agree with me.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's nice to hear. I think that a lot of people maybe shoehorn themselves into a training plan.
Definitely.
And think, oh, I've got to run an 80 mile a week now.
Yeah.
but I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, I was talking with there's a runner called Sophie Power who was on the podcast, and she got made the headlines when she did the UTMB while breastfeeding her a baby, and she said she trained for Spartathlon, so 153 miles, 35 miles a week, two really good heavy weight sessions.
Yeah.
And she did a few 100-milers like that as well. And it actually is like, you're right, it opens the door for people because you can think, well, look, I'm just not going to run 80 miles a week, so therefore I'll never do a 100-mile, I'll never do a 50-mile.
Yeah.
I might not even be able to do a decent marathon because I can't run 50 miles a week. But there actually is an approach that Brian's prescribing that actually says, look, you could do 30 miles a week, but you get the other stuff right, you get quick, you get good mechanics, and actually you can do this stuff. It's quite empowering, I think.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, it's just another great big option for people to enjoy running.
Agreed. That said, I think next week we're going to try and get someone on who's going to argue the other case, the case for low intensity. It would be interesting to know what listeners think. Let us know. Have you tried the kind of low mileage, high quality approach, and how did it work for you? podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
It's that time of the week again.
His fingers on the button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes. Kerry McCarthy and his weekly running news.
Joining us in the studio, the Starsky's to our hutch. It's our newsman, Kerry McCarthy.
Kerry, welcome.
Afternoon. How are we both?
Yeah, very well, good. Actually. Good, very well. Very much, I was riffing about the 10,000 metre PBs on the weekend.
It was
very good. Very good. Didn't run, but it was other people ran well.
Shame. Shame. Country's missed out on the delight there.
Right, what's been catching your eye, Kerry?
Well, first of all, before we start with the news, do I count as a listener if I want to give my opinion on the whole high-quality Brian McKenzie thing?
Yeah, for sure.
I just thought I would throw in that.
Good, because you are a man who's trialled this.
I have, right. Yes. Ahead of the time, ahead of the curve, ahead of almost everything. No, I'm a big believer in the high-quality, kind of high-intensity, low-volume approach. I would stress that, you know, I agree it's not for everyone. I did it a few years ago because I was a fairly typical sort of broken runner, lots of junk miles, plodding along, lots of imbalances and injuries. And I just couldn't seem to get below 4 hours. And I signed up to a CrossFit box in Hackney in East London.
Yeah.
And we spent 4 months doing a marathon training block. And I think the longest run I did was 13 miles once. And the rest of it was all sprints up to about 400 metres. The rest of it was CrossFit. Mm. And I took 17 minutes off my PB.
Wow.
There you go.
Because it was purely about, you know, as it was explained to me, my cardiovascular system was fine. You're not really taxing that during a marathon.
Yeah.
And it was just making sure that my body was strong enough to keep repeating that same motion for 42,000 odd steps.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the right people, I think it can definitely be helpful.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Good. Great insight.
Proof is in this wonderful pudding sat next to me.
Thank you, sugar. Right, you want some news, no doubt.
That is
indeed why I'm here. Okay, so an update on the London Marathon for 2020. As people will probably know, there was a bit of a kerfuffle or a farrago after the marathon this year. Runners at the back of the pack were not treated well. So anyway, Hugh Brasher, the event director, and the London Marathon team have conducted, I think, a fairly comprehensive kind of review of what's been going on. They have made some changes for 2020. So for anybody who ran slower than 7 hours this year, will be offered a free guaranteed place in next year's race, including a lady called Kerry Aldridge from Cardiff, who was the last person to finish in 9 hours and 11 minutes.
Right.
And she said she had such a horrific experience that there was no way she wanted to do it again. But having been off of this place, she's now very excited at the thought of, you know, coming back,
giving
it a go, banishing those demons. You know, I think it's a good thing to offer that to those people.
Mm.
In terms of logistics, the marathon are going to start the cleanup operation later so as not to affect those running at the back. I think there are limits to what they can do because obviously they're under enormous pressure to reopen the roads for Westminster Council and all that. They're going to look at the timings of when water is handed out so that they make sure that there was plenty to go around and it's not whisked away. Arguably, those at the back are probably in greater need than those further up the field, so that's a good thing. They're going to have one of their most senior staff at the back to monitor activity and see what's going on, and they will stay at the back all the way through. And they're going to tell contractors of the procedures that have been put in place for the back of the packers so that they're on board, just a little bit more cohesion so that everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's a pretty comprehensive response, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, you're never going to keep everybody happy. I think if the marathon want to cater more for the slower runners, you know, and there are a lot of these sorts of running is becoming sort of more egalitarian. People are taking part for many different reasons nowadays rather than just athletic achievement. And so I think, you know, particularly at the London Marathon, where it's a huge, huge fundraising event.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably earlier this year was very unfortunate, but it's just taken a bit of time for London Marathon's process to catch up with the nature of the event that it's become. But hopefully this has done that. Okay, and the other piece of news is a rather interesting report has come out, which has been published by runrepeat.com and the IAAF. It's the first ever state of running kind of global report. What they've done is they've analysed race results from 1986 to the current day. I think that's something like 107 million finishes.
It's a lot.
it's astonishing. Oh, 107.9 million race results over 70,000 events from 1986 to 2019. And that's included 96% of US race results, 91% from the EU, Canada and Australia, and what they say is a large portion from Asia, Africa and South America. There's too much stuff to go into here, but I just picked out a couple of bits, which is event participation has declined by 13% since 2016, when it peaked, with 9.1 million runners crossing a finish line somewhere in the world. But following on from that, it does say that the reasons why people have chosen to take up running have changed from, in 1986, almost exclusively an achievement-based pursuit, i.e. run as fast as you can over a set distance, to myriad different reasons now. They don't have statistics or a breakdown of what exactly, but obviously mental health and just physical well-being has come into it a lot more. And I think that means that people are moving their bodies and running, but not necessarily entering competitive events in the way that they used to. What else? Runners have never been slower, which is encouraging.
Hey, good.
Really. And particularly blokes, we are rubbish, apparently. In 1986, the average marathon finishing time for men was 3:52. Today, it's 4:32, so that's like 40 minutes slower.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
But that's average of a...
That's
of
average,
a,
yeah.
Of a ever-increasing volume.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a bit like it's become a bit more mass participation.
Well done, Ben. Sticking up for us then.
Come on, the lads.
Come on, the lads. Although, for the first time in history, there are now more female runners than male runners.
So more women than men now running.
As of 2018, 50.24% of runners were female.
So that must have changed massively from the last...
Well, you think about the 118 adverts and what they purport to represent, i.e. the average runner back in the day with the short shorts and the vest and the Dave Bedford moustache and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what you think about when you think about 80s running. And women don't really kind of factor in that to the same extent. And then you fast forward to the mundane and it's, you know, female participation has exploded, which is fantastic. And one final one, in terms of the fastest recreational runners, for the marathon, it's the Spanish. For the half marathon, it's the Russians. For the 10K, it's the Swiss. And for the 5K, it's the Ukrainians, which is... slightly random smorgasbord of nationalities there.
Yeah,
that's amazing. The nerd in me wants to look at like genotypes and just be like,
exactly.
Oh, where does the heritage and the whatever of all these runners? Do they all stem from one? Like, is there?
There's not a lot of.
Do you know what I mean?
Like the 5K slow twitch muscle fibers going on there. That's all. Spain, Russia, Switzerland, Ukraine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Great to see the UK not figuring on any of those. Fantastic.
Thanks a lot, mate. Thanks for coming in.
Most welcome.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guest, Brian McKenzie, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews, and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes, and a big thanks to Acast, our hosting partner. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.